You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. 7:06, nice to have you back here up north on a Thursday morning. It's December 11th, 2025. Parker Olson producing things down in Madison, Studio A2. And we have candidate for Governor Joel Brennan standing by to talk about the campaign that he announced just this morning. They're joining the field of Democratic candidates looking to succeed Governor Tony Evers in the 2026 campaign. Before we do that, though, we've got our grown-up giftless text to win contest, a multi-station, multi-state game across the Civic Media radio network. You take that Civic Media app, you look up one of the stations, you text us the keyword I'm about to give you before 8 o'clock. And you'll be in the running for the daily prize and the grand prize. And you can do it again with a different keyword at 9 a.m., 11 a.m., 1, 3, 5, and 7 p.m. And then of all those entries today, one will be plucked and will win $200 cash. Every entry is in the running for three grand prizes, a brand new snowblower, a portable air conditioner, stainless steel cookware set. For complete contest rules, head over to civicmedia.us. But for now, until 8 o'clock, the keyword to text us is candy, C-A-N-D-Y, candy, C-A-N-D-Y. You have until 8 o'clock to text that to us as part of the grown-up gift list text to win contest. From Rob in Tigerton, he says, good morning. It's partly cloudy and 9 degrees. It is a rest day for me after a busy day of plowing snow. He said, yesterday after work, I had a bowl of chicken noodle soup, and it hit the spot. It would have with me as well, Rob, but I think you probably did a better job taking care of your equipment than I did. My snowblower kept sputtering out. I am pretty sure I have a dirty carburetor, and so I have to finish the other half of it after I get that puppy all cleaned out. So hopefully your day went a little bit easier. Rob, take it easy on yourself. Enjoy a little more chicken soup today, if you can. I hear it's good for your soul. 7:08 is the time right now, and as noted, there is a new candidate for governor in the race, somebody who is running with a whole bunch of private sector experience and a little public sector experience as one of the top officials in the Governor Tony Evers administration during the first term. His name is Joel Brennan. He's president of the Greater Milwaukee Committee, and he joins us this morning. Joel Brennan, good morning.
Hi, Pat. How you doing?
Very good, thanks. Welcome to the race. It's, there's plenty of room. Jump on in here,
You know, Pat, I have 10 brothers and sisters, and so kind of I know what it's like to try to elbow your way in at a crowded table, so I'm familiar.
Oh, there you go. Okay, yes, that sounds good. Tony on YouTube says, is anyone else on the verge of announcing, and is their name Pat Kreitlow? No, Tony, no. There are at least 7 people who are more qualified than I am, and this guy is one of them. We've talked to some of the other 6, and we will throughout the course of the primary between now and August. But Joel is the newest entrant. So Joel, apart from the 10 siblings, tell us more about your story and how you came to be a candidate for governor.
Sure. Well, my story is really a Wisconsin story. My parents, my dad was born in 1927 to a single mom in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. My mother was born actually this day in 1928 in Milwaukee, grew up in Milwaukee and East Troy. And my dad had a half brother. My mom was an only child. They met after my dad was in the service and went to school in the GI Marquette University, having 12 children. One of my older siblings died. They had a child who died of childhood cancer at about a year. And so I grew up with 10 siblings, and we didn't have a lot growing up. My dad was involved in public relations and media and even some political stuff when I was growing up, but he didn't do a lot of things that were very lucrative, so we didn't have a lot, and we all found a way mainly through education. I worked my way through Marquette University, and over the last 35 years, I've had positions in and around public policy, really been a student of public policy that whole time. I was the head of Wisconsin's largest science museum, Discovery World, for about 11 years in Milwaukee, in 2018 when Tony Evers was elected governor. He asked me to serve as the Secretary of the Department of Administration, which is the highest cabinet appointment in the state. And I did that and was proud to serve with him for 3 years. Did things like trying to restore some of the things we had lost under Scott Walker and the right-wing legislature. By the time that I left after 3 years, we had a surplus of about $4 billion, a rainy day fund that had gone from a couple hundred million dollars to nearly $1.7 billion. And it was a time that I was really proud of. We also, during that time, had to deal with COVID and all the COVID relief dollars and getting resources out to families and farmers and small businesses in Wisconsin that absolutely needed it. So it was some of the most gratifying work of my life. And then about 4 years ago, just as Tony was heading into the reelection cycle, I left that job to come back to Milwaukee and run the Greater Milwaukee Committee, which is an organization, it's a membership organization that's about civic affairs and how do we bring together people from the civic community, the nonprofit community, higher ed, and work on the issues that are most important to southeastern Wisconsin. I've been proud to do that. It's a wonderful job, but at some point, you know, you've got to either be satisfied with the way things are, or you stand up and get in the game. And people are angry and disappointed and frustrated in Wisconsin. You see that from the other candidates. And I think the executive experience that I've had over the last 25 years, the experience I had in the Evers administration, suits me well to be somebody who can not only fight, and we all have to fight, but get something done. You know, we're all angry at this point. And sometimes when people get angry, they want to get even. When I get angry, maybe because of the way I grew up and who I am, I want to roll up my sleeves and get something done. So that's part of the reason why I'm inspired to run for this job.
Well, that, you know, getting something done would be, you know, remarkable in the state capitol these days, given what's going on. But when you first came to it and you were nominated to be Governor Evers' Secretary of Administration, you were one of the few cabinet members unanimously confirmed by Senate Republicans, people pointing to your private sector experience. Now, you know, again, I'm not saying that there's going to be bipartisan love now that you've announced that candidate for governor, but you've got that track record that you think is going to bring people together. Tell me more about your lane of the campaign, I guess is the way I'd put it, because we've got a state senator, we've got a state representative, we've got a county executive, we've got a former lieutenant governor, we've got the former head of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation all in this race, and the current lieutenant governor. So when Democratic voters for the primary are looking at this whole field, what is it they see in you? It's not going to be on the issues. I doubt that there's a lot of space on the issues here. So what is it that they're seeing in you in terms of both electability, but then also what kind of a governor you would be?
Yeah. And that's a great question. And by the way, like, I know all the other candidates. We're all friends and I respect them. I worked with a lot of them during the Evers administration. And so, you know, I think if there's political people are going to do this, I bristle a little bit at somebody saying, hey, what's your lane? You know, because I think when we reduce people to an ideological or geographical or demographic lane, we're kind of reducing the opportunities for the party as well. I'm a proud Wisconsin progressive. I'm a pragmatist. The thing I'm going to lean into is I have had over the last 25 years a succession of executive experiences. And I think executive experiences are different than being in the legislature. They're different than some of the other experiences that people might bring to the job. And it truly is about making those executive decisions. Now, you know, there's none of us who can lay claim to having been governor before. And you only understand and know once you get the job. But the opportunity that I had at the Department of Administration, and you worked in state government, and you're aware of what DOA does. Sometimes they call it the Department of All, mainly because it has the ability there. It really is the one place where you work across the enterprise. So whether it's the state budget, procurement, information technology, all the real estate that gets done, the things like all the human resources across 35,000 people in the in-state government. You know, I had the ability to work on all of those things and work arm in arm with the governor on things like how could we kind of bring the state back and start to respect working people after 8 years of Scott Walker and a right-wing legislature. And I think we had some success with that. Yeah, and I think one of the things that'll be different for the next governor is with the fair maps that we have now and the opportunities that are there in the legislature, we truly have an opportunity to have a Democratic majority in either one or both houses of the legislature. And that will afford us the chance to do something that is more on the offensive than we were able to do under Governor Evers. He has done a terrific job with the deck stacked against him. You know, people sometimes they think about this, the gerrymandering that's happening now or what Donald Trump is doing at the federal level. You know, just as you left the legislature, that's what the Republicans did in Wisconsin. And that's been the case for the last 15 years. We finally have a chance with fair maps to kind of play on a level playing field. And so I think there's opportunities we have in areas like healthcare, in childcare, in K-12 education, in reinvesting or investing again in the higher ed system in Wisconsin, which, you know, has always been the envy of the state and the envy of other places across the country. And we have disinvested in it. So I think there's opportunities there now. And that's what I'm going to be leaning into as I go around the state and talk to people. I also, you know, I'd like to think that the upbringing that I had and kind of having to work four or five jobs to get myself through college, a series of the experiences that I have in the breadth of those experiences, those are the types of things I think that I'm going to try to appeal to people on. And I want to, you know, if I've invested anything in the 35-year career that I have, whether it's the people in the Chippewa Valley or in southeastern Wisconsin or the Fox Valley, it's in relationships and the depth of those relationships. And that's what I'm going to try to do when I go around the state and talk and listen to people.
Joel Brennan is a candidate for governor. His website is brennan4wi.com. Brennan is brennanforwi.com. And then, of course, all the social media sites that will be going up as well. And just in the time we have left here, just a couple minutes to talk about, obviously, the midterms. That's when Wisconsin holds its gubernatorial elections. It's also a referendum on the president. You've worked with a lot of Republicans. I've worked with a lot of Republicans, and they don't want to say it out loud. There are a lot of Republicans not really happy with Donald Trump. Do you feel that, again, not to oversimplify things, but do you feel like you have more of an in there than maybe some of the other Democratic candidates do?
I don't know. I think my opportunity is that there is frustration and anger regardless of party right now and regardless of where people are on the ideological spectrum. People are hurting. We're within the next few weeks, you're going to have 200,000 plus people in Wisconsin who are going to lose their health care. Tens of thousands more who are looking at doubling or tripling their premiums. You know, we just this year in 2025, we're going to have the first time home buyers now are the average age is 40 years old. 5 years ago, it was 33 years old. In the Chippewa Valley, we're creating a society where we're all renters, where people can't be kind of achieving that American dream by being able to be homeowners and build wealth. And we've got Donald Trump running around the country saying that affordability is a Democratic hoax. You know, he wants us to believe it's the abominable snowman. It's the wolf at the door for thousands of Wisconsin residents. And we need to be able to articulate that, but also articulate a vision for where we're going. So that's what I'm going to do. But the opportunity, I think, in Wisconsin is that it's not just along ideological lines anymore. Everybody's frustrated, but they want to know who's going to roll up their sleeves and do something about it. And I've got a career and a track record of doing that.
And you can learn more about it at brennan4wi.com. Joel Brennan is the newest entry this morning as a candidate for governor for the state of Wisconsin in 2026. Joel, thanks for stopping in, letting the audience get a chance to meet with you. I'm sure we'll be talking again soon.
I look forward to it, Pat. Thanks for having me today.
All right. Thank you. Have a great day. Again, that is Joel Brennan, new candidate for governor. And we'll talk a bit more about that with Joe Zepecki coming up in our 8 o'clock hour as we look at some of the week's big state political headlines. But we have much more ahead here on this Thursday morning edition of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Sean O'Malley talking about your money in the markets in just 15 minutes. See you soon.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Nice to have you back on this Thursday morning. It is December 11th. We've got Sean O'Malley coming up in just a little bit to talk about your money and the markets and the whole notion of flying blind, as we seem to be doing now with so many different government reports being just canceled. And just trust the AI bubble. We've been told just do that instead. Let's see what else is making news on this Thursday morning here. I have noted with interest that there has been another Sean Duffy sighting in the news. Apparently, he is now wanting to improve airports in many ways, and there are many ways you could, but that includes doing some workouts, play areas for kids, but also workout areas. Duffy says a workout area where people might get some blood flowing and doing some pull-ups and some step-ups at the airport, which has one of the Daily Show correspondents saying, you think people want to work out while they're at the airport? Everyone at the airport is already exhausted from traveling, all right? We can't even walk to the gate. You had to invent floors that walk for us. And this is the same guy in Sean Duffy who wants to dress up when we fly. So what, now I'm doing pull-ups in a tuxedo before my 12-hour flight to Hawaii? Why don't you just throw in a hot yoga room in the terminal so everyone really smells bad when they board the plane? And Pete Buttigieg, the former transportation secretary in the Biden administration, also had a little fun with this, noting in a different talk show setting, there are a lot of problems that we could be working on right now, that any transportation secretary could be working on right now. Maybe fitness centers at the airport isn't where Sean Duffy should be spending most of his time. But as somebody else noted about the U.S. Transportation Department and some of the things that should be priorities, Duffy recently, right here on his Twitter feed, says, we've now knocked 9,500 truck drivers out of service for failing to speak our national language, English. This administration will always put you and your family safety first. Well, first off, Mr. Duffy, English is not our national language. We don't have one. We've been a melting pot since your relatives came here as well. But it's an interesting flex for the Secretary of Transportation to be bragging about taking jobs away from nearly 10,000 workers in an already ailing economy, and then figuring out how we're supposed to get goods to market. But that's where Sean Duffy's priorities are right now. Nobody has ever said that safety shouldn't be a concern with truck drivers and everybody else. But again, it's the mass deportations, it's the mass firings that are hitting people without any kind of due process or necessarily justification that really make this meat cleaver approach to government and to our economy so unhelpful. And there are people who get impatient with scalpels. I totally understand that. But sometimes a chainsaw is not necessarily the way that you want to come in there next. And that's what we're seeing happen with both transportation as well as immigration and other matters as well. But again, that's the Sean Duffy approach to all of this. And he's rightly getting an earful on it. Republicans are also getting an earful this week on the vote that's going to be taken in the Senate all about the enhanced premium tax credits for Affordable Care Act plans. Now, again, that was a pandemic era subsidy that expired. And that's been the Republican line. Hey, they expired. That's how this goes. Well, yeah, but so did the 2017 Trump tax cuts for the wealthy. And when Congress made it a priority to renew them, they did. And Democrats want it to be a priority. Frankly, most American families want it to be a priority to also extend the enhanced tax credits that make health insurance more affordable in this country. And as part of a deal to end the government shutdown, Republicans in the Senate said, fine, we will hold a standalone vote, an up or down vote on extending or restoring health insurance tax credits. The Republicans in the House made no such promise. And so this whole thing is looking, you know, much like political theater anyway. But as you know, things are already not looking great for Republicans in the midterms in 2026. That's just par for the course. The party that holds the White House often finds itself on the defensive. Well, even more so when everybody sees how much their health insurance costs have gone up. So there have been some House Republicans, especially from districts that are, shall we say, quite purple, to come up with something. And it only makes sense that they come up with something because this is the crowd that has always talked about repeal and replace. They want to repeal the Affordable Care Act, and then they want to replace it with something. And there's never been a replacement plan that comes close to doing what the Affordable Care Act has been doing for people. And frankly, as mentioned in an article in Politico, House Republican leaders did not present any new firm plan on Tuesday, and anxiety is rising in the House Republican ranks. Speaker Mike Johnson told attendees of a closed-door conference there was a list of 10 possible policies that could get votes in the coming weeks or months, according to five different Republicans who were in the meeting. The list did not include an extension of the expiring tax credits, which are going to impact 20 million Americans. There was some talk of health savings accounts. That is the ever-ready bunny of GOP healthcare, is if we just, they always say, put the money back in the hands of Americans and let them make decisions for themselves. That just takes us right back to where we were before the Affordable Care Act. You have to have the money first off in a health savings account, and then you have to get the insurance companies not to jerk you around to the degree that they were before you had some of the requirements from the Affordable Care Act. But there's also a plan that's called a pharmaceutical benefit manager oversight. And one other bullet point wasn't quite a plan. It simply said innovation, which I guess is kind of like concepts of a plan, but we still don't even know what the concepts are. Sean O'Malley's next to talk about your money in the markets, and we'll continue our 12 days of community kindness as well. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back. It is 7:35. I'm Pat Kreitlow here in Chippewa Falls. And candy, C-A-N-D-Y, candy is the keyword this hour in Civic Media's grown-up gift list statewide text-to-win contest, a multi-station, multi-state game. Every entry throughout the course of the day gets you in the running for a $200 cash prize and, of course, one of three great grand prizes as well. Head to civicmedia.us to learn more. But until 8 o'clock this morning, use the Civic Media app to text us the word CANDY, C-A-N-D-Y, and then different keywords throughout the day, starting again at 9 a.m. with Jane Matinair and Greg Bach for Matinair On Air. We're going to be doing our 12 days of Christmas, our 12 days of community kindness coming up in less than 10 minutes, and we'll be talking about Project Fire Buddies. But first, it's time for our visit with Sean O'Malley to talk about your money and the markets. Sean, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. How are you doing?
Well, I'm okay. We certainly 11 months now into Donald Trump's second term. I feel like.
What do you think of it so far? Are we winning yet?
I feel like maybe we're past whatever statute of limitations there is for blaming the Biden administration. But again, based on the lack of reports and everything, that still seems to be what I'm hearing the most when it comes to the economy. It just kind of feels like we're flying blind right now.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we'll get some data here actually in a few days, but of course they didn't want all that data out before the Fed Open Market Committee meeting, which closed out yesterday with a rate cut of 25 basis points due to primarily softening job market. You know, Trump is still pushing the "this isn't my economy, it's all due to Biden." Majority of Americans do not agree with that.
Well, because they heard him say, "I will fix this on day one. Prices will come down on day one."
Right. Yeah. Well, affordability went from being a talking point that he was running on as candidate Trump to now as President Trump. It's a Democratic hoax. So I don't know how that happened in 12 months, but or 11 months or whatever. But, you know, that seems to be the story that they're trying to push out there, which isn't, you know. Well, look, doesn't have a lot of traction.
Nobody's saying that he promised prosperity, but he did promise affordability. And instead, what I'm hearing is, well, your kids don't need as many dolls and your kids don't need as many pencils and things like that. It just doesn't. Again, he's not going to give you the Bill Clinton "I feel your pain" message, but it kind of feels like he's not even trying to get to
Point. No. Empathy is something that Donald Trump has never felt in his life, believe me. Mm-hmm. And it's weird that it's always dolls and pencils, isn't it? I mean, those are the only two examples. You need to make do with less is what he keeps saying now. Okay, so that's the alternative. That's the solution now, Mr. President. Make do with less. You don't need as many pencils. You don't need as many dolls. Okay. Well, I guess we know what the Trump kids are getting for Christmas. Good to know. Thanks for that.
I think that they'll still do all right here. So what do we know about economic growth? Because we've certainly talked about the potential for stagflation, and in what data you are seeing, is that concern still warranted?
Yeah, I think the stagflation concern is definitely there. We know that the job market is very soft. That was the primary reason referenced by Fed Chairman Jerome Powell in yesterday's comments after the FOMC meeting to cut interest rates. They usually only cut interest rates when you see economic activity slowing down. Inflation was the second reason, and he said prices are up in his comments after the decision for the rate cut. And we haven't had any hard data on GDP, but all of the estimates from all of the Federal Reserve governors in the various 12 districts are definitely lower. They're basically on an annualized rate between like 1.4 and 3%. So we're definitely, shifting downward in terms of economic activity, which really shouldn't come as a big surprise. The tariffs, especially those related to steel and aluminum, have had a huge impact on manufacturing. I mean, I know Trump wanted to make manufacturing jobs a priority, but he basically sabotaged himself to make sure there was no way that was possible to happen.
And so much of it is still tied up in courts, and so much is still up for debate. And then there's still the certainty of what's to come. And those would be, the cuts that are coming, the massive cuts that are coming in the big bloated boondoggle. And I mean, again, some of it, quite a bit of it, has been pushed off until after the 2026 elections. But that doesn't mean that people won't make an issue out of all these looming cuts that are out there as well.
Right, exactly, Pat. I mean, you were just talking about sort of, what's happening with the ACA subsidies, right? They're going away. The Republicans don't want to do anything because, of course, Dear Leader doesn't want any sort of, form of the ACA to continue, even though he's had, 9 years more to come up with some sort of plan. And all we've heard is, concepts of a plan. That's not much of a plan, Mr. President. So I think we'll stick with what we've got that's actually working. But don't forget, those happen right now. So we're seeing the price tag hit on those. 20 million Americans are seeing the increase. And as a double smack to farmers, since they're self-employed, guess where they get their health insurance?
ACA. Right. But what we've heard, and I mentioned just a little bit ago from the House Republican caucus, is coming back to a familiar chestnut, health savings accounts. And of course, you have a lengthy career in finance and ways, good ways to park your money and maybe bad ways to park your money. Is health savings accounts an adequate replacement for the Affordable Care Act?
No, it's an excuse. Health savings accounts are a way to save money pre-tax so that you can pay for either deductibles or health insurance. So what the Republicans are trying to do, what they typically try to do is say, you should just get some sort of catastrophic health insurance and then park money that you would have been using to pay for real health insurance into a health savings account so that you can pay for the deductibles should you have to use, up to whatever the self-insurance point is on your catastrophic health insurance. Not a great plan. I don't know any providers that'll say, okay, yeah, we'll take your, health savings account as insurance and look at your catastrophic insurance and say, this doesn't really cover what you're trying to get, done medically. So it's just sort of a non-starter, that doesn't work in practical terms.
Yeah. I mean, it's just kind of in the same vein of everything. The answer for everything is a tax credit. Which again just simply decreases revenue for all the things that you want to do, as opposed to just actually providing what it is that people want. And the other thing I think people forget with the Affordable Care Act is it's not just the premium support to make the insurance affordable, but it was the rules and requirements on health insurance companies So they stopped jerking you around. You paid your premium year after year after year, and then you'd get denied. And the Affordable Care Act, it didn't end it, but put a lot of limits to it, and you blow those up. We just head right back for the bad old days here.
Right, but that was part of the profitability for health insurance in the first place. They had to make money in different ways. They went for vertical integration, so now they are the pharmacy, they own the doctors, they own the clinics, they own your insurance, they own everything attached to your healthcare, and they make money by denying you coverage, denying you insurability for services provided.
Sean O'Malley talks to us each week about your money and the markets. We'll do it again next week. Sean, thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thanks, Pat. Take care.
All right. Time now at just about 7:44 for our 12 days of community kindness, where we have been looking all over Wisconsin in the spirit of Giving Tuesday and extending it for 11 more days because of all the people and places and organizations that are doing some great things. And this time around, we're going to talk about something called Project Fire Buddies with Kevin and Scott and Eric. Let's see, it's Eric Krug, right? Scott Dempster. And Kevin Holdifer?
That's correct.
Hey, there we go. Good guess on me. Yay, make a point for me. Kevin, why don't we? You're the Chief Personnel Officer for Project Fire Buddies. You want to kick things off and tell us a bit about what Project Fire Buddies is?
Yes, sir. So we are a not-for-profit ran by firefighters and volunteers, but started and ran by firefighters. And what we do is we're trying to bring more positivity to kids in our own neighborhoods. Kids that are sick with cancer or critical illnesses constantly are battling going to the hospital. They're dealing with all kinds of medical emergencies, and we show up with our lights and sirens on those bad days, right? So our goal is to make more good days by showing up with the lights and sirens, but this time we come with gifts. This time of year we're showing up with Santa. So I brought Eric and Scott, both our Wisconsin chapter presidents, to talk about their experiences as chapters in Wisconsin. We started in Illinois, but we are now starting to blow up in Wisconsin. We have four total chapters and another eight that are interested. So,
all right. And the website there is projectfirebuddies.org. Let's let Eric and Scott come in and tell us a bit about the Plover and Bristol chapters. Eric, we'll start with you and talk about what it is that made you want to get involved with this.
I saw an interview that Chris did on a podcast. I can't even think of the name of it, but I was just right away moved by it. I thought, what a great thing that they're doing with these firefighters. It's basically like Make-A-Wish, but with, the firefighter edition. We've had a couple pop-up rubber duck drops where we've dropped ducks from the ladder truck to just a 50-50 raffle to raise money for this project. And then we're going to do some more, we're just getting our name out there. I think we've been in it for 5-6 months now. We contacted the local Y, and really it's just to get our name out there. And the best part about Project Fire Buddies is that even if we don't have a kid, we know we're helping kids all over the place. So I think it's just awesome that the money goes to all the kids. It doesn't have to stay in your area. So you can help out in any way.
Scott, you want to speak on behalf of Bristol and what made you want to get involved or the kind of things you guys have done already?
Sure. So I found out about Project Fire Buddies through a friend down in Illinois. He's a chapter president in Lombard, I believe. So he was telling me about it one day, and after hearing about it, I thought that would be a great resource to have available to our community. So I brought it to our association. We approved it right away, started a chapter. And we actually just currently found out maybe last week that we have our first fire buddy. So right now we're working on setting up that initial visit and getting all their presents ordered. And everyone's very excited to make more good days for him.
Sounds like they would be. Hey, Kevin, tell folks how they can either donate to Project Fire Buddies or if they maybe want to apply to be a fire buddy, how should they go forward?
So everything's done through our website, www.projectfirebuddies.org. You can donate there. If you have a child that would fit that cancer critical illness diagnosis, they can be nominated there. They have to be nominated by the parents. We also have a link to our store, which sells all of our t-shirts, all of our swag options, and all the money goes towards the kids. Right now we're operating at 89%, which is platinum standard across the nation for non-for-profits. So 89%, so 89 cents of every dollar is going towards a kid with cancer or critical illnesses.
I'm looking at the shop right now here. Again, you can go to projectfirebuddies.org, click on the shop button. There's all kinds of great swag there. More Good Days, Project Fire Buddies, all about superheroes. And, you know, Kevin, that's got to make you guys feel good. You have a very important and dangerous job as it is, but now you get to kind of act as community ambassadors as well. The kids really look up to you. This has to give you a nice feeling.
Yeah, as firefighters, we're there to help people during their bad days. We want to give those more good days. But in all honesty, we're there to help the community in every way, not just when they have a house fire or if they have a medical emergency. We're there to help them in any way possible, and that's what we're trying to do here.
That's great. Kevin Holdifer is the Chief Personnel Officer with Project Fire Buddies, again at projectfirebuddies.org. Eric Krug and Scott Dempster represent the chapters in Plover and Bristol. Gentlemen, thank you all very much for helping us spread the word about your great organization. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
All right. Appreciate it very much. All right. Coming up yet in our 8 o'clock hour, we will talk to Joe Zepecki about the entrance of a seventh Democrat in the governor's race and more. That's after 8 o'clock. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
All right, just a few minutes more to text the word CANDY, C-A-N-D-Y, before 8 o'clock as part of the Grown Up Gift List Text to Win contest. Here in western Wisconsin, if you want to follow the news through Civic Media, James Kelly is the guy to see, and you can catch his updates on 93.5 The Tap, that's WCFW HD2 in the Chippewa Valley, or on the website for 93.5 The Tap. Their website is thetap.fm. Again, thetap.fm. James Kelly covering things in the Chippewa Valley newsroom and joins us now. James, hello. How are you?
I'm good. It's one of those mornings where you make yourself a coffee and you get ready to leave the house, and then you get in the car and realize the coffee's still on the counter.
Oh, yes. And then you got to go be cold again if you want to go get it. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I totally.
We just admit that defeat. I'll get it later.
No, I. Oh, you did. Okay, you will. Yeah, I had my own share of defeat yesterday, as I mentioned briefly earlier, where apparently I learned the hard way that there's a reason why you should put more, you know, use premium gas in your snow blowers and your lawn mowers and things like that. Cause I got a carburetor that's all gunked up, and I got a friend that says, you know, seafoam is the fuel additive that you want to get in there, and that'll get it all cleaned up. So that's my outdoor task, because I couldn't take care of it when the weather was 10 degrees warmer. Now that it's four degrees out there.
We always go wait back just outside. A little too long.
Yes. So whether it's forgetting the coffee or having to do 2 days worth of snow blowing, it is that time of year for the little frustrations. But, you know, we get through them all as best we can. Let's get to the data center thing, I guess, thing, because that's definitely one of the issues of the year in various communities around Wisconsin, Menominee among them. What is new on that front?
Yeah, so as you know, they had the statewide protests last week speaking out against data centers just in general with all the issues they've had, you know, in Port Jefferson, in fact. But out in Menominee, this has been going on for a few months now that they've been pushing back against this data center by Balloonist LLC. Again, this data center wouldn't have been constructed until at least 2027. This is years off. So the city's now looking at other options to kind of push back and maybe even get a little bit more of a negotiating footing for addressing some of the concerns of the community, specifically electricity and water usage. So this week, the Plan Commission voted to recommend that the City Council adopt a new ordinance creating a new zoning district specifically for data centers that includes some of these more extreme, you could say, zoning regulations, you know, things like it has to be, the setback has to be 400 feet instead of 50 feet and things like that. Now, the important thing is that it still gives the city the option to move forward with the data center in the future. It just gives them a better way to negotiate the terms of that data center. And it also, you know, gives residents a little bit more hope that the plans are being paused for now. We are giving legitimate consideration to the downsides.
Aha. Uh-huh. You know, the data center, these projects are certainly much bigger than I think people were originally thinking. And I liken it to what I heard earlier in the Midwest Farm Report, somebody from the Farm Bureau saying, oh, well, these rules are trying to get rid of all farming in Polk County. And my response would be, no, they're not. They're trying to get rid of the factory farming, because there's farming and then there's factory farms. There's data centers, and then there's these massive data centers. It's like the difference between a warehouse and an Amazon warehouse. And if the folks in Menominee are trying to right-size their rules for these large data centers, I mean, that kind of dialogue is only going to be helpful in the long run, I would think. But
yeah, and before this ordinance, one of the key things is that technically data centers would be zoned as warehousing under the current zoning code. So there's really not a whole lot that the city can do. They have to accommodate the legal land use.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's head over to Chippewa Falls, where the governor has signed a multi-million dollar bill to help out with behavioral health.
Yeah, if you remember, about a month ago, the Chippewa Falls City Council officially approved the plans for this hospital, the Rogers Behavioral Health Hospital. It's going to be out by Highway 178 and Wasota Green Boulevard along the Old Abe Bike Trail. It's going to have enough room for 14 beds for inpatient care, 24 beds for longer-term residential stay, and some outpatient care. And there was legislation proposed by State Senator Jesse James and Representative Clint Moses for $10 million to help fund this. It's meant to address kind of that loss of behavioral health beds at HSHS Sacred Heart. So Governor Evers signed that bill into law this week. That funding is ready to go, and they're getting ready to start construction this spring. Could open by spring 2027.
Got it. Okay. And let's stay in Chippewa Falls, where, look, you hear about lead service lines for water, and the first place you think of is Milwaukee, because there is a massive problem there. But as we've said several times on this program, lead service lines need to be replaced in all kinds of communities around the state.
Yeah, there's the Safe Drinking Water Loan Fund program. Chippewa Falls is going to get over $1.9 million through that. Now, about $957,000 is just through principal forgiveness, so they're just going to get that money. The rest of that funding is going to come through a loan with a 0.25% interest rate. So really just trying to make it a little more affordable for these smaller cities, smaller communities like Chippewa Falls, like Rice Lake and the city of Thorpe, which also got funding through this round. It was a total of $159 million for 29 municipalities through this round of funding. So just trying to get a little bit more affordability for replacing those lead service lines, which can have a lot of negative health impacts on people.
Absolutely. Yep. And well, we started the segment talking about how cold it is. Let's end on that note, because the ice rinks and hopefully the warming shelters as well are going to get going in Eau Claire before too long here.
Yeah, the city of Eau Claire announced last week that the Pinehurst Warming Shelter is planning to open on Monday, December 15th. A couple weeks after that, December 26th, the ice rinks around the city are going to be opening up. Just got to wait for it to get cold enough for long enough so that they can flood the ice rinks and actually have ice there and not worry about, oh, well, is this going to melt if we have one warm day?
Yeah, right. No, you don't, because then the ice gets just all lumpy bumpy when it refreezes.
Yeah, and no one wants that.
No, and I haven't gone ice skating for a long time, but as a kid, I loved when our local ice rink was open and gave you something.
I've never been ice skating before, even on a rink.
There we go. Parker, add that to his list. Y'all have lists.
So a lot of people went ice skating out on this pond back where I was from, and I always thought, the water's down there still. I know it's there, so I'm not interested.
You are a wise man, which is why you are our newsman in the Chippewa Valley. Catch him on 93.5 The Tap and thetap.fm. James, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Have a good one, guys.
All right. Coming up, we're going to be talking to Chad Holmes from our station in Wausau and Joe Zepecki as well, as we roll on this Thursday morning edition of These Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.